Thank you very much for the question, and many thanks to the committee for indulging us on the issue of time this morning. Much appreciated. We make apologies for our acting director, Jamie, who unfortunately had a pressing job interview this morning, so unfortunately he couldn't make it. That's the only apologies we have in mind. I'm going to turn to introduce themselves. I'm a Asian DDG of Culture Promotion and Development. But just a question of guidance to a person in terms of the time that we have today. Should I keep the presentations to 20 to 30 minutes to allow for more question time and discussion? Thank you, ma'am. The presentations are reasonably long, but I understand that the committee has the documentation and has a chance to review them. that was a terrible slip. My apologies. Let's hope the rest of the presentations go off better. Thanks, and I'll allow my team to introduce themselves.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Pam Penmanzi, and the unit in the
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Paula Magizela. I am Chief Director for Heritage Preservation and Promotion.
Good morning. I'm Martin Ray. I'm Project Manager.
Good morning. I'm Mudaur Kinoa, Parliamentary Member of the Staff Minister of Art and Culture.
Yeah, well, you
morning, honourable members. My name is Obi Kalevi, the Indigenous Office.
Thank you very much. You can stay up.
Thank you. Starting with the long-standing commitment of the Department of Culture to coming report to a portfolio committee on the stage of connection projects and infrastructure maintenance. We'll go through the presentation structure as a fairly standard one. The purpose of the presentation, the context and the background to some degree, the review of the current infrastructure projects, its feature, and again, repetitive the spelling errors that are in the document, mitigation of current state of affairs, and the new approach to infrastructure management, which is essentially core what we'll focus on in this presentation. So, in essence, a critical element of the portfolio of the Department of Arts and Culture is actually to ensure that the infrastructure provides access and equitable facilities. And as such, there's been a huge focus over the last couple of years on the capital work program, including very important legacy projects, and of course, the library conditional grants. On average, the library conditional grant is just over R1 billion a year, and the department's own capital work budget is about R500 million per year. The Capital Works Program makes provision for the development of fixed infrastructure within a very clear framework governed by the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, which provides for a unified and standardized framework for the management of such assets. The Act places quite a lot of responsibilities on government departments, including the development of user asset management plan. Obviously, those responsibilities in our context extend to our public institutions as well, who then also are required to develop and submit what are called UAPs, user asset management plans. The creation of the verifiable asset registers, documented assessment of the condition of the property, and the costs associated with maintenance and repair. The UAMP is a very comprehensive document. It deals with issues of planned maintenance, unplanned maintenance, minor and major repairs, and of course, asset rehabilitation and investment. The demand for capital works funding, of course, always exceeds the supply. So if you look at the trends from 2011 to 2014, you can see that the difference between the demand and the supply is fairly substantial. So what we always try and do is balance with the priorities of the project. Projects which are not funded due to limited funds are placed basically in a project pipeline so that as funds become available, so these projects move through the pipeline. If the approved or prioritized project is not working well, then eventually we review and we redirect the funding to other projects in the pipeline. So to give you a sense of the allocation, in 2012, we're spending about 89% of our allocation to heritage and legacy projects. We overspent on the National Archives and Library Service. we are reasonably on target with performing arts, and in total, about 95%. A similar trend, although slightly better in 2012-2013, when 98% expenditure to the legacy project, 57% in National Archives and Library Service, performing arts 111%, with a balance out about at 98%. In 2013-2014, again reasonable figures, 90% pretty much across the board, across the three major capital works programs, but still with a degree of under-expenditure, which the portfolio committee has highlighted as a concern before. So, in essence, the expenditure trends in those prior years are reasonably good, but as was pointed out when the Department of Arts and Culture came to the committee a couple of weeks ago to report on our 30-year expenditure, the capital works expenditure for this year was particularly challenged, and we'll deal with some of those issues as we go through this presentation. So, we implement our infrastructure program through the Department of Arts and Culture itself, procuring services and paying service providers. Through our DAC institutions, where, for example, in the Performing Arts Program, the bulk of the money actually gets transferred to the institutions themselves, and they manage those funds. Through the National Department of Public Works, through its regional offices and head office, in which case there's a pay on recovery, and the Independent Development Trust, through its regional offices, funds are transferred into an MOU, and the work is done on that premise. So that's essentially the outline of how we use capital works. So now beginning to narrow in on the specific issues of the legacy projects. Cabinet approved the National Legacy Project in 1998. The aim is to develop and construct new commemorative structures to reflect a more inclusive landscape. The preservation and promotion of our collective heritage, and of course a very important contribution to job creation. The National Legacy Project takes its mandate from the White Paper, and of course, very importantly, the PRC recommendations referring to symbolic reparations. In 2014, 254 jobs were created on construction projects related to the National Legacy Project, and we currently manage the implementation of about 15-year legacy projects, either through the Department of Public Works, EPW, or the Independent Development Trust, the IDT. If you look at the status, this table is a high-level summary, which indicates that we have 11 complete projects, seven of them in Khartoum, two in KZN, one in a free state, none in the Limpopo, the Northwest, Western Cape, and Northern Cape, or Mpumalanga, and none in the Eastern Cape. There are a huge number of projects in the pipeline, however, with 40 in total, with an additional 12 in Khartoum, 7 in KwaZulu-Natal, 6 in the Free State, 1 in the Limpopo, 3 in the Northwest, 6 in the Eastern Cape, 3 in the Western Cape, 1 in the Northern Cape, and 1 in the Mpumalanga. So as the pipeline essentially comes to implementation, so the legacy projects will have a far more representative base in the provinces of our republic. So in terms of the legacy projects completed, the graves of Lillian and Bonnie, Helen Joseph and Charlotte Mosega have been upgraded. In 2011-2012, upgraded the JLB grave chart and launch of the master plan. In 2012-2013, the Steve B. Cogenta in its intake was completed. In 2013-2014, Norway, the phase 2 was completed. Graves were upgraded, the Bayes Museum, Rima Musa, and Libertella Dube. Freedom Park exhibition was launched. The Matola Monument and Interpretation Center was completed. The War Museum War of Remembrance was completed. The enormously important and very, very large Nelson Mandela statue was implemented, and the Nkosi Bambaataa statue was unveiled as well. In 2000, we saw the Women's Memorial, the Chief Arbiter Judy Project in 2005, which resulted in the Judy Museum, and of course the Simone Michelle Monument in Virginia in Finlandia in 1999. In terms of the current legacy project, the very important Sara Bartman Center of Remembrance, it's being built in honor of Sara Bartman, who was brutalized in Europe. The South African government facilitated the return of her remains from France and her burial in Hanky, Eastern Cape. The Centre of Remembrance is at 14% completion at the end of February 2015, and the completion date is October 2016. The Department of Public Works has trained 8 young people from the local community as part of their Extend Public Works and National Youth Service Program, and basically the youth undergo in-service training on site. 91 workers from Hanky have been employed in the construction of the centre. The Northern Complex, which is the section that's currently under construction, comprises classrooms and dormitories and amphitheatre and administrative buildings. The Southern Complex, which will begin building quite soon this year, is the museum and the very important Koshan Museum. The allocated budget to the project is just shy of 164 million, and it's spent 14% to date, about 24.4 million. And you can see the site there in the photograph. It's a very substantial site in an exceptionally beautiful location. This is the Center of Remembrance, the dormitories, as you can see, under construction, the administration block under construction. So some substantive work on Shire about the project, and I think we can actually put some photographs in it because the committee has always asked if they would like to see. Here is the image. The Brown Fisher House colleague, Brown Fisher, an anti-apartheid activist, is being honored through the restoration of his home. The house has been purchased and an exhibition will be installed and unveiled in 2016. The purchase and registration of the house has been done through the Department of Public Works. We've approved a budget of about 6.9 million, but at this point, because of negotiations pertaining to the sale of the property, we haven't actually expended funds to date. The Dr. J. Morocco House project, similar to the Brown Fisher project, restoring the home of Dr. J. Morocco to memorialize his legacy as one of the leading figures in the struggle for liberation. Unfortunately, this is a complex project. The contractors abandoned the site, claiming disagreements with the family which impeded the work. The escalating temporary accommodation and furniture storage expenses have been very difficult. Its approved budget is 5 million and expenditure to date is about 528,000, that's 18.5%. One of the critical things about the legacy project is it's not as simple necessarily as building something. There's always very substantive stakeholder consultation, the families of the people whose lives are being commemorated. So it can sometimes be a complex and quite difficult process as these projects roll themselves up. The J.L. Dubé project, to commemorate the legacy of J.L. Dubé, the first president of the ANC, a heritage master plan was developed for the implementation at his home at Inanda in Brisbane itself. The priority elements approved for construction in the current financial year are the perimeter fence, 100% complete, an amphitheater, which is almost complete at 80%, driveway, access, and parking, which is currently at 80%. We expect to see practical completion at 31 June 2015, so just in a couple of months. The approved budget, 31.5 million, expenditure to date, about 10.3 million. And you can see in the photographs the construction of the amphitheater. The Winnie Mandela House project. The house where Winnie the Pooh Theatre Mandela was held under house arrest in Bonfort in the Free State is being renovated. The aim is for it to become a museum and a housing exhibition. The approved budget for the house and the Wesleyan Church is 6 million. Expenditure to date at Winnie Mandela's house is about 569,000, which represents about 9.8 million. As you can see from the state of the property, there's quite a lot of work to be done there. The Wesleyan Church is a site in Bayhoek, which is attributed to being the birthplace of the African National Congress. It's been renovated. An exhibition is pending approval by the body before installation and the official opening in 2015. In terms of expenditure to date, we've spent about 14%, which is 851,000. Musa Hill, apologies for the pronunciation. The museum construction started in 2014 in the Eastern Cape, commemorating the death of 11 people, injuring the 58 and the arrest of others who were later sentenced to death by hanging. These persons were in revolt against the police of laws that resulted in the seizure of their land and complicity with the regime. The construction of the museum phase 1 started in 2014. The priority elements of the master plan for construction were at 47% by the end of November. The first phase is scheduled to complete in March, so just in a couple of days' time, hopefully. The approved budget is 15 million, expenditure to date 12.8 million. Owa Tambo. The development is to create fitting tribute and memorial sites with different facilities such as an interpretive center in commemoration of ANC President Owa Tambo. 95% of the work is complete. The rehabilitation plan with grave, construction of a new perimeter fence, the refurbishment of existing dwellings such as Rondalwald and the house, the construction of a new family house and two additional Rondalwald, the refurbishment of the cattle kraal and vegetable garden, the construction of a welcome center, and the refurbishment of a two-room dwelling pending approval by the South Africa Heritage Resources Agency. And the next steps are based on landscaping and the setting up of a brick-making mission. The Kananga grave site is for the upgrading of the grave site and, of course, the construction of the interpretive center. Work at Kananga is 78% complete. you can see that there's 50% complete work at the Garden of Remembrance. Unfortunately, there was a stoppage due to a terrible arson attack and a service delivery protest. The priority elements at Otamo continue to be the graves, the basin pathway, landscaping, and the statue. The approved budget is 27.8, expenditure to date, 6.4 million. Matoya Interpretive Center. The Memorial Interpretive Center were developed to memorialize the cadres of the African National Congress who perished in a raid carried out by the then South African Defense Force in 1981. The anticipated opening is 2015, and you can see from the photograph that obviously the facility is at a very advanced stage. The text and videos currently being finalized, and a cooperation is underway with the Mozambican government to create a flagship institution that will combine the Matoya Monument and the Samora Machel Memorial. So you can see the image of the memorial there. It's quite an imposing facility. The National Heritage Monument, which is something that the Portfolio Committee has heard before, is the purpose is to memorialize anti-apartheid struggle by recognizing individuals who fought for democratic South Africa to recognize the mass struggle of the South African people. The heritage monument will be developed on a portion of land within the Groenkloof National Reserve in Pretoria. The Sewers Acre is the primary component of the National Heritage Monument. The City of Tshwane will donate the land, and the Department of Arts and Culture, who lead the development of the project, has created a steering committee comprising local, national, and provincial government chairs. The components are the Heroes Acre, the statues which will form a long walk to freedom process, the Vignette Gardens, the main visitor center, restaurant school facilities, a commercial and park center, and an amphitheater. And that image just shows the extent of the site, which again is very substantive and very large. These are some of the images of the Heroes Acre. And in terms of future legacy projects, the Liberation Heritage Route has a budget of 250 million attached, being implemented in collaboration with the National Heritage Council. The National Heritage Monument, 195 million. Nelson Mandela House in Carlton, 5 million. Nelson Mandela House at Drakenstein Prison, 11 million. Kisangana, 20 million. Flap House, 24 million. The Cool and Sand Heritage Route, 28 million. And the Archie Gourmet Statue Project, 8 million. So in terms of the maintenance infrastructure project, we have a series of projects which are carried out by our institutions, which involve, in some cases, reconstruction, installation of air conditioning systems, fences, the renovation of educational facilities. So it's essentially ensuring the ongoing maintenance, upgrading, and repairing. So there are allocations made on an annual basis to these kinds of facilities. And in the interest of time, I'll move through these very quickly just to say that there is annual allocation against the UN that is approved by the Department of Arts and Culture. So in terms of challenges to date, some of the labor disputes have led to work stoppages. Inclement weather has resulted in construction delays, and if anybody who's ever done a home renovation knows, the weather plays a very big part in getting construction done. Contractors abandoning sites and very slow remedial action. In some cases, protracted stakeholder engagement, such as the Wesleyan Church, a less than satisfactory implementation rate by the IDT, and a lack of internal expertise to develop that to determine value of money, especially where there are cost implications. So there are some quite profound challenges that the DAC faces in the implementation of this agenda. Essentially, expenditure as of 28 February, unfortunately, is about 9%. Relative to the expenditure in prior years, we have definitely regressed. It's been very difficult in the 2014-2015 year. A change of leadership, there's changes in administration with new priorities. We've had substantive administrative delays. There have been challenges with our implementing partners, DPW and IT, and there are real challenges within the department and agency. Needs not necessarily being properly articulated in the UN's poor project management and very little monitoring and verification of work done. To mitigate the current status quo, we've essentially done a major revision of the allocation to avoid overexpenditure. A proper contextualization in the needs of business plans really needs to be thinking about sustainability and lifecycle costing. Confirmation of work done. Confirmation of invoices received, making prepayments and requesting rollovers. So these are our key strategies in terms of mitigating the current status quo. a new approach to infrastructure is going to be implemented from the new financial year, whereas essentially a policy is being drafted to put in place proper norms and standards, concepts, scoping systems for the infrastructure program, and very importantly, criteria for prioritizing a project. We're going to be centralizing infrastructure as a function within the department, specifically the implementation element, so that essentially line programs become clients of a better resource infrastructure unit. Capacitating the infrastructure unit with the requisite skills, and very importantly, starting to outsource technical work through, for example, omnibuses of professionals, and beginning to think about using other implementing agencies over and above DPW and the IDT. And that, Jefferson, is the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I think as we engage each other in this meeting, we begin to know more about each other and what we need. And as the committee, we appreciate the fact that you've noticed that we want evidence. We want to see this change. And we want to see where they are happening and, I mean, at what stage are they in. I think it's important. We thank you for that. I'm now going to give the committee members an opportunity to ask questions and to make comments. But I think as the committee, one other thing that we are interested in as you give us a presentation, because infrastructure is not just about brick and mortar. It's about creation of jobs. How many jobs have been created in that space where this structure is being erected? And also, what role does the structure play in the social cohesion that, as the department, you are mandated to do? And your monitoring mechanism, you give money to IDT, and how do you manage? How do you monitor the work that IDT is doing? And I think as your IDC, Independent Development Trust, yeah. So how do you monitor, you know, the work that you are giving to them? Because sometimes as the committee, as they usually say, we ask you things that we know, we ask you things that you have experienced as a committee, because I have experience with IDC and the work that they have done. So I would like to know how you monitor the work that they have, that they are doing with you. Honourable members, it's an opportunity for questions and comments. Honourable members?
I just want to know, within all this project, how many people with disabilities have been employed?
Thank you, Honourable Vazir. Honourable Maitland and Honourable Makutu. And Honourable
My Chairperson, thank you. I think one needs to work on the support as an information sharing and to know how far the department is doing on the issue of it. But mine, I will go on page 25. On the digital department heading. Capacity and challenge within the department and EDPT. I will go to the last point. Poor management and monitoring and verification of work done. I don't expect to see this because the department has the capacity in terms of any project that they're doing. We know that the IPP part of it is public work, but the Department of Arts and Culture is not immune on this because when you do the learning, it's you that is giving it to them. So when you say well, project management, on which side, the department or public work or IPP? When you say no monitoring and verification of your side, it's a serious problem. You are leaving a monitoring and evaluation to the service. What is happening? And who must monitor that? These are the issues of governance. And this where Chairperson, you find problem when it comes to the issues of finances. when they say no verification of work done, one will say how much was spent or how much was not spent. So it's a problem on its own and a challenge. So maybe the department can assist on that. And on there were challenges in case when you said the labor. I don't see it. I'll come back.
So thank you. I've got quite a few questions to raise. The lady sitting here, you said you want to sit there?
Just Pam, the Murray Infrastructure Development at the department.
She's when she's done.
Unit started in 2010.
Mm-hmm. So she started the unit in 2010. Okay. No. There is something that you said in your presentation which is a bit of a outlet. I want to be sweet. Presentation, I got a lot of no, you said okay, let me finish my input into it. You see, when there are problems, once people raise 2, 3, and 4 reasons for the problems, then it's it means you are not putting your finger on the pulse. You know, as a young boy, I bent the field. I think I was a very young naughty boy. Then my mom caught up with me and she wanted to know who bent the pulse. Someone who was there, bent it. So when she said, you know, tell me the truth. I said, no, there's another man who came here with a horse. So I tied all this. I want to find that something that will be acceptable. So the department should know what the causes of under-extension is. The change of leadership cannot be a reason. The change of leadership cannot be a reason if you had planned your things. Then you should qualify how you arrive at the statement. When you say change, you've not told us the change. That's why I'm asking lady. Yes. Because when you talk infrastructure, what's the DG and the rest, but the back stops here. And that's why I'm asking when was she appointed. She should be there. Which leadership are we talking about? Minister, who changed? For the DG and all of you, I mean, who are we talking about? Because it really doesn't make sense. And all I can say, and I think my colleague has said, if your planning is inadequate, it is failure on your side to execute the responsibilities adequately. And now, I looked at the figures, they are fine, although, remember, when we raised the issue, we actually did not want to see the picture. We wanted to get the coordinates as to where exactly are these properties lying, because our intention is to do oversight using ICT, and we are making headways in Parliament to procure a system where we zoom into anything physical that you're talking about and see the status live as we are seated here. So we want the coordinates for your projects. In our next round when we meet, we will zoom into all our camp, we will zoom into whatever, and we would like to see it live. Whilst we will do physical visits and so on and so on and so on. So we need the coordinates of this property. But there's an issue that is of concern to me. When you showed us the overcam, and you can go back to the picture, that picture agents are East Province, the Sakwene, the concrete. Okay, yeah. Go back a bit.
came last year, what were you saying we should look at the picture? What does it say? Because see, that picture is not saying anything. It just shows the houses a little bit. Actually, there's nothing really that speaks to us. Except the next picture where there is some development. But why did we have to look at this picture and there's the story on the next picture? So it's a bit of a problem. When you presented the Winnie Mandela and the church, 6 million allocated. The expenditure is not clear whether how much has been spent on Winnie. The only amount that is shown there, I think, is the one on the church there, because even there it wasn't clear as to what we were talking about. So the information that we are getting, to me, is not quite successful. The way in which, there's an expenditure, another trip. Yeah, somewhere, I think it says 600,000 or 600, I can't remember what the figure is, but there is a figure. Of the 6 million, it's about 600,000 that's spent. But it doesn't say where this is spent on Winnie Mandela's house or Western Church. And the heading of that thing is saying Winnie Mandela House. And then the West just comes in as a, in the middle. So that connection of that information is a bit of a problem too. I don't know which of the two do we want us to look at. And so I'm asking, on this project, 500,000, I mean 500 million spend on, because you're not telling us where this is spent. Even with Dr. Moroka, we really couldn't get as to what the problem is and how you're hoping to resolve that problem where there's a disagreement with the family and whoever else. The story is not very clear. But the Nelson Mandela House in Luton has an announcement there. Has that house declared something? Government has a house. I thought that's a few family project. And what is that? I've not heard about that project. It would be interesting to know. And what has happened now? Is that house been turned to a heritage site or what have you? Or what is the department having to do? Give us more information. The 24 million at Flatbush. At Eugene's place. That's his place. I know that there is a lot of history there, people perish there, some of them unaccounted up to now. What are we, and it is, that's part of our heritage, the heritage that killed us during our time. It would be nice to hear what we are planning to do at that place. I think toward the end you raised the issue, and I'm just going to go a few things up. You raised the issue about the English Museum, language thing. The question that comes into mind, we know that there's an Afrikaans Museum, there's an English Museum, but we've got 11 or so languages in the country. What is the department planning to do? And the last time we visited the Afrikaans Museum here, what is happening with the language? Because the treatment of the language will continue to remain uneven unless we say as to what are we planning to do and when are we planning to do that. Because I think it is a sore point. What you have not said in your presentation, is something that was in the need about a huge amount of money that
It just appeared one or twice in the papers, I think last week, on certain funds that were allocated to a project in KZN. It's missing. I can't see what's happening. It appears to be quite a huge amount of money. 500 million, 800 million. I can't remember the 200 million. Something like that, but I know that there was a huge amount of money allocated somewhere. I can't see it. Now, we've got an expenditure incurred at the project Windybro in Johannesburg. Huge amount of money, 5 million. I have not heard anything about it. I know we visited that area and we saw the expenditure that was incurred or could have been 1.5 million or I don't know, but there was actually nothing that we believe is something that's worth really helping. And I don't know what happened and we'd like to know the thing. Now, you've not raised anything about libraries, right? I'm not sure whether I missed it. I may have missed it, but I didn't hear nothing, and I want to believe that this is one project that the minister announced, that the plans of the department were that eventually you will have all those libraries. And so it's very good that you did brief us about the performance of your libraries in the 9 provinces, and where I know last year, when we received the first presentation from the department, before we passed the budget, we were told about where the projects were and so on and so on. I know at the time, Limpopo and another 3 provinces have not spent well and there was shift of funds. So today I can't see anything on that thing. Now, just as a comment, Chair, the issue about the leadership projects in the various provinces, surely the situation is not acceptable. We are raised with the minister that we are unhappy with the manner in which the spread of legal projects in the country continues to unfold. Where we have 2 provinces that are actually the super beneficiaries of the projects. And that's what we are saying, there is nothing to do in the rest. It's Gauteng and KZN. So they do their stand. And then the rest really nowhere. When are we going to see the change? Because I know that we even raised a question in Parliament, and the Minister committed on the Chairperson's question, as to whether we will see these things happening in other provinces. And the Minister committed that that's what's going to happen. But I think we are actually perpetuating the old, as much as we continue to reiterate, even those things that happened during the apartheid time. So the old issue is to me, Chair, very unsatisfactory. But yeah, I guess the few things that I have raised, I'll try to hear what the department is. So, thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I want to get an understanding from the project management point of view. We have been receiving this report since last year with regards to the capital projects from the Department of Agriculture. The reason that are given here are the reasons which were given last year by the former DG. His name is Kala. And we told him right in his face that we are not taking those reasons. One was that the department was underperforming. And he attributed the reasons that relate to the change of political leadership. And we told him that we don't agree with him. Ministers can change at any given moment. But the administrative staff that implements the programs and project remains. And now we are getting an information from you that cable projects are not moving simply because of the administrative change of leadership in that's what I had. And I hope you might be referring to the previous DG, which we don't agree again. Unless if you want to tell us that the departure of the DG relates to some of the projects that we're talking about it. So, hence, I want to understand from a project management point of view as to what could be the problem. We understand the Department of Public Works is not only looking on the projects of the Department of Arts and Culture. There are a number of departments that are waiting for. I, sitting here, I'm very much fortunate. There are certain projects, I'm sitting in the Portfolio Committee of Board. There are certain projects that the department are assisting the department. And we have not, the department has not experienced poor performance like here in this department. That's why I want a proper explanation from a project management point of view. Because what I'm getting here, I don't agree with it. The other issue, Chair, which I've got a serious fear around the capacity and the manner in which the department is playing, it relates to the project that was highlighted there, which I think is a very huge project that's going to be implemented, the National Heritage Monument. If we've got the department that is underperforming like this, what's going to happen with that particular project? That project is so important to this country. And I have a very serious problem in relation to that. You see, 90%, if you have checked your previous allocation in 2012-13 and now, there was a little bit of depreciation. Can that be explained? What caused that? And now, you are left with some, I think it's 2 days. And you are at 90%. What does that mean? You want another depreciation that you are going to get? I understand that you say you are going to request rollover, but I don't think Treasury will agree to that. So, and I request technical explanation in relation to that pension.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I'm now giving you an opportunity for the Honourable Chair, some of the questions have already been asked by the Honourable Members. I'm also worried about the issue of the rollover, especially when they started negotiating with the Treasurer that they would need the rollover of the demand for the capital debt. The interest rate has been very terrible and it's really not acceptable. In other words, the whole year there's nothing that is taking place out of here because we have the norm on spending. Same for every quarter, we are expected to be spending between this amount and this amount. So it does not even cover the expenditure of a chair, which is perhaps 25% under normal circumstances. But in chair, I'm really interested on the issue. First, the projects here, they are not named the way that project. I do not want to assume that Graffiti House is in different case. I really don't want to assume that. Can you perhaps maybe be told where is the Brown Fisher House? And then perhaps again, the issue like the person was presenting said there are issues around the process of that house. Can you get what are the rates? Even the Morocco House, I don't want to assume that it's in Tavanchu or it's in Mahige. was used to live on Delta City and Habanji. So can we also get them the mocha house that we are talking about? And maybe also the details, because we have constituencies around this area. We talk to these people every day. Influence there and they can be there for the processes to speed it up. So Winnie Mandela in Brampton, is it a provincial project or a national project? Well, as far as I remember, it's supposed to be a provincial project. So can I get a clarity whether it's a provincial, because it never left the province. That project was not moving at all. It has been there for years. I think it was delayed since 2009, I'm thinking of that correction, that it's going to be, there's going to be a museum in Brantford. And the exit stage, I think 2 years back, that has caused a very serious problem for the community there during uprisings. They were using this as one of the issues that they were raising, that they have been promised that the house will be renovated between a certain period, just that I don't have all the details about that. And perhaps maybe an explanation on the Wesleyan Church, because my assumption is the Wesleyan Church is complete, the project is completed. The only thing that is left in my understanding is the exhibition and the opening of the museum that is next to that. Can I just clarify that what is still left within the principle of the Bible, especially with the Wesleyan Church?
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you very much,
honorable
members. Can you get the from the
Thank you very much. I will be heavily utilizing the expertise of my colleagues who are with me today to answer some of the questions. But I think that if I can just weigh in on some of the capacity issues, and it's quite instructive to look at the status of legacy projects. One of the challenges that we've had is that a number of legacy projects has grown exponentially over the last couple of years. The original cabinet memo, if I recall, spoke 10, and we've delivered on 11 to some degree of those projects, but every year there are more and more, and the scale of the projects increases. And I think that we would acknowledge the concerns of the committee with the capacity. We are equally concerned. We have recognized that need for technical, both project management capacity, but also technical capacity within the department, consulting engineers, consulting architects, consulting quantity surveyors, to essentially assist us to better manage these processes, because the work has grown, but our staff have not grown. So to give you a sense, PAM is a team of two managing the infrastructure component, and in the legacy projects we have a directorate of, if I'm not mistaken, five people, Paula, including a director. So you can see the scale of the projects versus the actual human resources that we have. It is absolutely being recognized by the acting DG as a major problem, and that's one of the reasons that we've come to the portfolio committee to be quite frank in some respect about the capacity challenges that we face. Because there's some skill in the department, but not enough, and there certainly are not enough hands to do the work either, which is where some of the challenges around monitoring and those kinds of, and planning come to some degree. It's not necessarily a palatable thing to say, but it is something that we experience on a daily basis. So in terms of specific questions, I just wanted to come in a bit on the discussion about the budget of public works. We are very tiny compared to public works. You can see that some of our projects are 6 million here, 6 million there, while I'm sure the water projects that are being implemented by DPW are substantially higher value. And that's one of the challenges that we have in dealing with the regional office and the head office, which is why we also need to restructure our relationships with those key departments. There are some regional offices who are wonderful and are fantastic to work with, but we really struggle because we have lots of small projects and not large-scale projects. And it's wonderful to hear that the water projects are going along well, but equally we hear from others in our stakeholder community that struggle with DPW implementation. And that's true both of the buildings owned and also new projects like schools that need to be implemented. In terms of the data such as job creation, chairperson, I'm not sure that we necessarily have that on hand. My colleague Paula might be able to answer. Certainly Paula would be able to answer on the specific questions around the legacy projects, the status of Graham Fisher, where these projects are, and Pam certainly could weigh in a lot more on questions pertaining to management of our relationship with DPW and IDT, the monitoring and evaluation aspects,
and of course the Windy Brow situation as well, which the committee has actually had part of itself. So I'll hand over to colleagues to respond to the question, starting with Bula. Thank you.
Why doesn't the Zibbo appear anywhere in the resolution? Because it should be
there. I think that the mistake on our part was perhaps to assume that we were looking at heritage-related infrastructure, which is perhaps why the libraries are not here. So again, an oversight on our part, and we can certainly submit a report on the performing arts infrastructure project, as well as which would then include the Libra and the libraries. Mm.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you, honourable members. I'll attempt to respond to the questions in the sequence in which they arose. The number of jobs created as at the end of the third quarter here, we hadn't achieved our target, and we had counted 430. So we need to verify that at the end of this quarter, the fourth quarter, the exact number of jobs created. They would have been created at the beginning of the year, when the project began and people were hired, and so should have stayed fairly stable throughout the year unless a new project started. So at the end of the third quarter, that's the number that we were at. We haven't been able to effectively monitor expenditure that has gone through IDP. There have been a number of structural changes in the department where a new unit was created called the TSO, which essentially took over the liaison role between the main function and the implementing entity. When that structure was dissolved, in addition to the capacity challenges that we were experiencing within the department, one has to admit that the monitoring of expenditure did not go well at all. We had not made it a practice up to date that where there are invoices received, the work must be verified to have happened. And that's one of the changes that have come in, but before anything is signed off, verification must be done that the work has indeed happened. So admittedly, Chairperson, that monitoring of expenditure has not been what it should be. The Honourable Member asked how many persons with disabilities have been employed in the legacy projects. In addition to the number of women employed and the number of youth employed, that is a figure that hasn't been kept track of. And again, it's one of the new monitoring requirements that we must monitor not only the number of jobs created, but in which categories. Is it professional? Is it labor? Persons with disabilities, women, and youth. So we will henceforth be reporting in terms of those specifics. We were asked, that's sometimes that issue on what causes the under expenditure. The specific coordinates of the project, we get those for you, Chairperson, but I can report that, for example, Brownfisher is located in Bloemfontein, the Brownfisher House, the Dr. J.S. Moroka House is the house in Habanchu, there's Imuza Hill in the Eastern Cape, and so on. You will get the specific coordinates. I also look forward to seeing the live room. I think that gives us a clear indication on a day-to-day basis of what's going on. So we'll get the specific coordinates. The picture at the Old Tambo homestead, essentially the priority elements included the rendezvous, the perimeter fence, the cattle call, and so on. We're not professional photographers, honorable members, so the quality of our picture is not great, but we're trying to get a picture that kind of gives a long perspective of the work that was done at the homestead. At the Winnie Mandela House, when the projects were conceptualized, they were packaged as the Free State project. So a single amount, the $6 million, was allocated to the Free State project, and of that amount, I think 9% has so far been spent on the Winnie Mandela House, and there is an amount there that indicates what has been spent on the Bi-Hope exhibition. So we had a single global figure for all the Free State projects. That's why it reflects in that. But we know the point that we need to separate the two so that it's clear what we are talking about. The problems related to the Dr. Jess Moroka House, we indicate there that the contractor abandoned site. The essential problem was that the contractor who was hired by IDT did not have the requisite heritage expertise. And as a consequence, there was some damage to the property. And the family was extremely unhappy with the contractor. There was some conflict and the contractor abandoned site. So since then, the IDT has been trying to recover certain costs from that contractor as well as hire a new contractor. So the gist of the quarrel was the damage to the property and the IDT attempting to institute remedial action in that regard. On the Nelson Mandela House in Houghton, there is $5 million that will be set aside to purchase the property. This is the property where he first lived, not the last home he had before he passed. So the idea was that the DEC would purchase that property and preserve it and declare it so that it is known that this was the first home he occupied in Houghton. So the $5 million that has been set aside is towards the purchase of that property. Negotiations are currently underway with the owners of that house. But essentially the department wants to retain it as a monument. On Flatbush, this project is in the conceptualization phase, Honourable Member. There are two proposals in place at the moment. One is that the property itself will be divided into two, where an indigenous garden will be grown so that the herbs that are used there can then be made available to the public. And then there will be a place of reconciliation, including a monument, and the actual structure itself will be converted into a museum. So the master, the conceptualization is happening at the moment. There is a master plan that will be developed, but it has not been finalized. Essentially, to attempt to change the memory of that place into something that the public can live with, that is a healing of the past. With regards to the project that the Honourable Member spoke to on the $300 million allocated in KZN, I think the Honourable Member is referring to Enyo Kenya. That project was driven out of the office of the Director General, the previous Director General, and from legacy projects we would be misrepresenting a report if we made a report on it. We are unable to report authentically on that project. It's something I believe that is being looked at by the current acting DG, but at the moment we're unable to respond on that one, Honourable Member. I've noted the comments on the spread of the legacy project, and we will attempt to address that to the satisfaction of members. The picture speaks for itself that the provincial spread is not adequate. I've responded on the Bramfisher House and on the Moroka House. On the Winnie Mandela House, the project did start off as a provincial project and it practically came to a standstill, which is why when we were approached by our political principals to take it over, we then took over and started to work with the IDP to achieve its restoration. There have been some work at the project, but again, the contractor there abandoned sites, and part of the problem was to attempt to get remedial action in place before proceeding to hire yet another contractor to complete the work. And what is left on the Wesleyan Church, the precinct itself is complete, but the exhibition, like stated on the presentation, the exhibition has to be approved by the party. And at the moment, the party is not satisfied with the content, and there have been conversations and meetings to try to rectify that to the satisfaction of the ANC. But until such time that the exhibition content is approved, the installation won't happen because it is reflective of the ASCII National Congress. I think those are all the questions raised in this.
A reminder, Paula, the question is the same museum and the extent to which there will be scope of language, and also just to indicate that the NUNE project will be part of a forensic audit which has been initiated by the department.
Thank you, Honourable Members. All your questions are answered. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the reminder. Regarding Mandela, there has been agreement that other languages will be incorporated into the museum, and also that the museum itself, its name will change. It will no longer be called the National English Literary Museum, but rather will be reflective of all South African languages. So that process is underway.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Members. I will touch on the issues that were raised under the challenges.
under expenditure and the monitoring and evaluation. The infrastructure program is currently under crisis in the crisis. And as the honorable members noted, that it's not the first time that the challenges that are noted, they represented in this house. Since the unit started, the focus when we started, it was trying to find a solution with establishing a proper unit which will assist the department to sort of move it away from Department of Public Works. Because when we started, when we established the unit, the department solely relied on the Department of Public Works on the implementation of the infrastructure. The unit started with one person, and at the time we concentrated fully on the issues of the GIAMA, which was the Government Immovable Asset Management Act. We did the verification initially to check to assess the portfolio, because even Public Works at the time did not even have the asset movable asset register of the Department of Agriculture. So the focus then started for the verification of the immovable assets. We appointed CSIR to assist the department to come up with a plan, starting on how big is the portfolio, what strategies should we follow, and the capacity that will be needed by the department in order to establish a fully-fledged infrastructure unit. We've managed to achieve at least up to coming up with the immovable assets register and proposing also the capacity that the department will require in order for it to say it has the infrastructure unit, because currently it's just a name that we have. I'm giving this background, honorable members, because the question also was raised since 2010, what is it this unit was doing? Coming up with the strategies as was proposed by the CSIR, and also on the capacity that the department is required at the time, but through the leadership change, those strategies or those proposals were never implemented. We started new processes to look at the strategies again. Hence my colleague was saying there was a PSO who was appointed also to do an assessment and come up with a strategy, which were also not implemented. Currently, the challenge is capacity, and that what leads to under expenditure. In the unit, there are two people. They are responsible for office accommodation, which is another budget, which is leases, municipal charges, and also state-owned accommodation charges. And the two people, they are also expected to do monitoring of all the projects that were presented here. Under expenditure, there has been a confusion in the current financial year, which is not explained in the presentation. There was no one who was managing, especially the projects that are under Department of Public Works. And that came up when we were having a strategic planning session, when even the SDG wanted answers of why the status quo is so bad as it is currently. We've all acknowledged the challenges, and he even said, then if there is no one in the department, they can give answers in terms of the management of the infrastructure, maintenance the pages. So there's been a confusion the whole financial year. As the Honourable Member said, there are other projects that are not yet. It's been scattered all over. There are so many people that were assigned to do the infrastructure projects. But in the last strategic planning session, we came up with the strategies on how to move forward, which is the first one was to centralize and then also try and capacitate the unit, because the major problem why there is a lack of monitoring and evaluation, yes, there is a chief director, but we need the technical capacity, of which some of the things that were proposed in the initial assessment by the CSIR when they were appointed to come up with a strategy. So I'm giving this background to answer on the challenges that were explained in the current situation and why we're coming back again. We feel they're talking about the same issues and the monitoring and the evaluation. Monitoring and evaluation is really, really lacking because there's no technical capacity, and it's one of the things that we have identified in the last strategic session that we need to capacity the department to understand the technical capacity.
One remaining question which pertains to discussions with Treasury about possible rollovers. We are in constant engagement with Treasury about expenditure, always discussing what the possibilities and implications are. So there are a series of discussions that are ongoing with Treasury almost always. The further question, and I think it was raised about the issue of change in administration, which is obviously a difficult question, so I'm going to try and deal with it. We've had some budget cuts which have provided for the necessity to essentially prioritize some of the budget. So that's the, in essence, that depreciation that the member noted is that we have had consistently, largely due to under expenditure in this budget, fairly small but quite consistent budget cuts. The complexity in any change of administration actually becomes with the nature of the projects identified, the new projects, and the extent to which those then become matters of great priority, obviously, and other projects become slightly less priority. But the commitment is already made. So those projects essentially need to move forward, and in the case of, for example, the Sarah Bartman project has been around for a very long time, but it requires us to adjust our allocations to also include things like the National Heritage Monument. So those are some of the difficulties with change in administration. Obviously, some of the complexities about the investigation that's been initiated into irregular expenditure in the department by its nature will identify some of the large capital works projects, which is why Inverbeni, for example, is one of the projects that currently is at a standstill in terms of its development and ongoing implementation. But there are, and the change of leadership generally means that new ideas come in, new initiatives, and I think, as my colleague Pam pointed out, a very profound recognition on the part of the FNDG that our infrastructure program is not in good shape at all and actually needs to be rethought from the level of policy, which is what essentially has been proposed, to really begin to centralize so that there's a clear line of accountability and control, to ensure that there's effective capacity in the unit, and then very importantly, to outsource technical work where it's required, and to begin to think about using other implementation agents where possible, where feasible, and simply where necessary. And that speaks then to one of the questions that was asked about the implementation of the National Heritage Monument. It's obviously a very big project, and that's also why there's a steering committee that's been constructed across the spheres of government, again, to strengthen capacity, but also one of the big issues in that project would be the nature of the partnership arrangements that make sure that it happens, because it has so many different elements. So we really are rethinking how we do infrastructure work, and I think, as has been pointed out, it's not before time, because we've been here before. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the responses. And I think this has been raised by other members as well, the fact that the picture speaks to the the narrative. I think it's important. The example that was made of the O.R. Campbell homestead, so it says something and you can't read it from pictures. So I think it's important that pictures speak to the narrative. That's very important. And there is a follow-up question from another woman.
Chairperson, I think the answer that you are giving me is the meta system, especially under the infrastructure community. Where you find under the first nomination of the community, to remain exchange there. Chair, the problem is the unit, the capacity, making the capacity to end is where the infrastructure is. And I don't know, Jefferson, with all the projects that we're having, how the department is going to work, and the recommendation that now then is a new approach. When the timeline, when the projects are going to finish, when the strategic meditation will start, especially in this unit. Because infrastructure unit is it's like your welfare of the department. So, it's where all the big money are there, because we're talking about the project. And it's so sad if it does not happen today. And when Madame was presenting, working other projects were great in the department. And what was the purpose of this unit? Chair, I will say last time I said it again, this unit, we need to call them, we must tell us what is happening. Because the way it is, it makes sense anymore. The infrastructure, how many projects were there, how much did you spend, how many projects were finished, even the smallest one. When the madam talk about the verification, why is the audit committee? Because other things, they must go to the researchers of the department. The department needs to see the environment when it comes to say, yes, if it is affording, but it's not there. So it says if the capacity is not there in the department, and if you are here with us telling that there's no capacity, so there's no even capacity with the people that are here providing the report to us, because in some instances, there's no answer. And so going back again in terms of the challenges, question three, there's a challenge to today. The labor dispute leading to the work stoppage. On which side, the department or the contractors or the agencies? It needs to be verified. On the issue of inclement weather results in construction, I can't take this. One question is correct. Any project that we know the specification and we're going to start, these are the things that you need to do with when the project comes up, whether in January or maybe next June, June to climate. Doesn't mean that Africa will not expect when it comes to issues of climate change. We do have. And these are the things that we do in the possibility of the project within them. The lack of internal expertise go back to UAE. How can you start a project that you know that you don't have the capacity to do that? So we are talking about the agency project that will take South Africa forward, especially in terms of the disparities that we have. It's so that when the official of the department is sitting there, who's supposed to assist the government and the South African up there are not doing nothing. But there are salaries that are being paid monthly. We can take it from 2010 to the unit has started. Till now, we are still planning to remedial to remedy the situation that's not going. And the issue of the leadership change won't take it. If you appoint a wrong contractor, where the leadership change is taking place? When you appoint somebody who doesn't have the capacity on the issue of heritage, when the new minister came, what's the problem? Because it's you that you are there. The leadership change, where does it come from? Does the new minister the movement of people on human space stopped because of this. Whereas here, the project was ongoing. So I don't think this issue of leadership change, it even affects us as a community. They are saying the leadership change that's changing there is even into the community. Because we are new, the state parliament. So they must stop saying the issue of the leadership change. After the very situation where the leadership change came with it, will the political leaders say because there are changes, now we must provide sanctions. These are administrative issues here. And the Marine Corps is to the political office or the leadership, that they undermine us. The issue of leadership change can't stop because there it must be the issue of the administration and issue of the capacity. And we did the people capacity change. So maybe this is for the last time we see these challenges to today. Next time it must come, we can bring us a difference in that we need to know that there is a remedy in this situation. Thank you.
Just to practically look into the numbers, the department has an allocation of 436 million on the capital project share. They only spent 38 million. And 388 million comes back. Correction, if I'm wrong. And if this is the expenditure, I wanted to understand. When do you notice that your projects are not moving? Thank you.
Thank you. The issue of capacity is absolutely noted, and I think that the members have raised quite sharply the need to deal with it. One of the things that we have been doing in the department is a process of mapping all of the projects to really try and understand how a legacy project moves from its concept stage to its implementation stage, and then if it becomes a legal institution, what that project is. And in that process, we've been able to identify where existing project management capacity can in fact be allocated into the central infrastructure pool rather than necessarily being allocated into one portfolio. It's not enough, but it is already an indication that it can, if we reorganize some of our internal resources, actually begin to capacitate the infrastructure unit. So those are discussions that are absolutely ongoing. In terms of the labour dispute in England, whether I'll hand over to my colleagues in the line function to just deal with. But in essence, the planning issues are acknowledged and really heard. And one of our biggest challenges in the department, as has been pointed out by the acting DGM minister, is poor planning. And I think that what we are reaping now is essentially a whirlwind of consecutively poor planning commitments that have resulted in a series of projects crowding together to essentially make implementation very difficult. In terms of the numbers, the under-expenditure in the capital works component has been a subject of quite a lot of discussion in the department for some time, and obviously the slow movement is a matter of grave concern. However, the critical issue is bearing in mind some of the weakness of the planning documents, such as the UAPS, as has been pointed out. What we needed to do was a very detailed process of re-looking at all of those documents, and that essentially was delayed some of the processes. We have, however, finalized some of the allocations for this financial year based on the UAPS. So the picture come the end of the financial year will not look that bad, because as far as possible, where the entity's projects are ongoing, transfers will be made, and we will ensure that necessary monitoring happens and move towards ensuring that the UAMs are better quality, because that, as Sam pointed out, is actually the core of the system, is the user asset management plan, because those essentially allow for the allocations to be made. So if I can just ask Paula to comment on issues of work stoppages and inclement weather and how those are handled broadly, or if there are specific projects that are being impacted on. Thank you.
Thank you, Rishi. I think the point of the honourable member is taken on increment weather. You know, when contractors say to us, we were rained out for a week in the Eastern Cape, because we lack the expertise, we have not been able to quarrel effectively against us. We know better to be able to say it should have been planned for, because you can anticipate that kind of thing happening. So the point of the honourable member is well taken. There have been several labour challenges on the side of local labour on the project. For example, at the Sarah Bartman Centre of Remembrance, we have made sure that the labour that is used on the site is from the town of Hetty itself as much as possible. But there was a disagreement on the rate, where labourers had heard that in other projects of a similar scale, the people received a higher wage. So without proof of that, there needs to be some engagement with the community liaison officer, the local economic development office, and so on, in order to arrive at an agreement. So some of those disputes happened when already labourers had been contracted at a particular rate, and then later on they came and made this claim that on similar projects the rate was higher. We also experienced similar problems related to labour disputes in, for example, JL Dube, where there was a quarrel about labourers being brought in who were from outside Inanda. So the labourers from Inanda itself bound to until the issue was resolved. So we had those kinds of labour disputes that needed to be resolved before work could proceed. So it's been mostly on the side of labour force on-site contractors to do the project work. Thank you.
Are there any other issues? My question was not, I don't think my question was answered, because over and above the job creation stuff, I asked how to this project. Impact on the community that are around them, other than just creating jobs for them. On social connection, is there anything that you ensure that as a department, when you are building a structure, you ensure that even your money holistically is addressed in that particular area? Because if you give to IDC and then say, okay, you can build the structure, then it's the social facilitation. People in the surrounding area need to know that there is this person that is coming up. Why is this being constructed? What are the benefits, you know, all that? And do you, when you break IDC, you can start off the break that you have, or you do it?
I'll hand over to my colleague Paula for a bit more detail, but the legacy projects have a very detailed conceptual base, and it's precisely that sort of stakeholder interaction that is such an important part of not just the delivery of the infrastructure, but in fact the long-term implications of the infrastructure for communities, but I'm sure Paula can speak to that in more detail.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for overlooking that. I did note the question. As Monica was saying, at the inception of the project, the stakeholder engagement is paramount, because all of the projects are speaking to a particular restorative aspect of the community. So the legacy projects are designed to not only change the heritage landscape, but to restore and to some extent go towards commemorating events or persons of significance in the community. So part of the social cohesion work that happens is for communities to recognize themselves in their own environment through these monuments. There's also an extensive engagement with the communities on local beneficiation, so that where these massive scale projects take place, most of the jobs that are created are from the local community in order to give some level of economic development. Some of the jobs are not permanent, but the idea is that to alleviate the economic circumstances of the community, for a period of time, those economic circumstances change. And
because of the skills training that comes with the job, it provides opportunities for local members to gain skills that can be marketed and sold elsewhere, whether within a community on other projects or outside of that community. So that aspect of the project doesn't go to IDP. It is handled by the department from inception to implementation. That's part of how we handle the social cohesion aspect here. I must say that it has been a very important part of the legacy project. None of the legacy projects have happened without community consultation. None of them.
It was all assembled legacy project.
Yes, ma'am. What happened as a consequence of the fallout in the community is separate from the stakeholder engagement that we started out with. If you recall, Chair, the Owat Tambo was a huge master plan that consisted not only of the DC but other government departments. And what had happened was that a consultation with the community on needs, what was needed in that area was to be addressed. So, for example, there was supposed to be a Tushanong center as well, a library and so on. So the community was consulted, to the best of my knowledge, on what needs were to be responded to in that area.
Fortunately, I'm from Botswana, and I have an experience. But it's that area that sometimes we would ask you questions and we know the answer. So it's very important for the department to give us information. Because sometimes ask things that you know from my own experience there are issues. In fact, even the homestead where this work is being done, according to the community, is not the right homestead that we should be doing. So it means that there were levels of consultation. And I think it's important that everybody is involved when you consult. People within the province should be consulted. Because the department in that province was gone in later when all the things had been done. And it was at that stage when we were saying, the mayor of O.R. Tambo at the time came in late when everything had been done. And he knows exactly where the actual going to be. So I think it's important. The consultation is very important. But I think as the committee, we have declared from the onset that the expenditure is a crime. You can't even advise and you understand. Not to all the needs that are out there. So and the expenditure has been declared a crime by this committee. And this is totally to the unacceptable that you can spend that percentage at the that time. So I think it's important for the department to give us a plan. You know, what the honorable member was saying, we need to get a detailed information with detailed plans, you know. We need to get this so that we are in a position, as you said, ours is an oversight mandate constitutionally. But as a personal committee, we actually said that we are prepared to assist because we're the same community, all of our best constituencies. And in those constituencies, we keep up this issue and we are prepared to come to the department and say, in that area, this is what's happening. Can you look at this? Can you actually upgrade your delivery in that area? So we would like to have your plan, the infrastructure plan of the department. And you tell us what your budget is and how much you need. To give us a care plan so that we can advise and we can also help do our oversight function. Because if you don't give us all the information, we can't do our oversight function properly and to the best of our ability. So we are not at all happy as the committee. We are not at all happy with the report and how things are happening. And give us your clear turnaround strategy of this. If you are saying that you are going to have a unit, you are going to give us the debate so that you can ask the questions and you can be clear. Because sometimes you say this is what you are going to do and then you are asked questions, and then you think, you know, this is not the way we should go, we should go the other way. So I think it's important for you to give us all the things without us having to ask a lot of questions. But as I said, we are not happy at all, and we want you to give us your turnaround strategy. And it must be clear, and it must be detailed. If you are saying we are going to have this unit, how is this going to be structured? You know, who is going to do this? How many people are going to be there? What are they going to be doing? And, you know, all that stuff. I think it's important for us. It's also fair that as a committee, we are given. And your identification of areas where there is dispute, where the private ownership, and you like to work in this, how are you going to, how do you believe you are going to sort this out? And your planning, you can't plan for something that has a budget, but you should have a budget for planning. Because I think this is the problem with infrastructure projects. You think you're going to plan this year and implement this year and have the whole budget there. Meanwhile, it's not easy. You have to, you have a planning concept budget for that, and you know that you start implementing the following year. Because it's impossible to plan in the same year and implement in the same year, because there are a lot of issues that we have to deal with in the implementation. So we will, as the committee, invite you, the infrastructure unit, we will invite you to come and present to us. As the honorable member was saying, to give us your project, how much it is, the cost of the project, and the processes. And one other thing that is important, that as the committee we are bombarded with, is your procurement processes. Because people feel that in some instances, the department just chooses those people, choose people that they feel can do the job. So I think as the committee, if you can get that information, because in a way we are related to you, what you do is asked from us, you know. They come back to the portfolio committee to say, this is what is happening in this department. So we are related. Back it or not, what you do affects us, you know. So I think it's important for us, for you to give us all the information so that we can ourselves look at information and be able to respond to people when they are asking us. So when you come back with the infrastructure program report, you give us even the procurement process. You ask ICT about their procurement process. Because you can't say, I'll just give money and look the other way. ICT, how are you going to do it? So that you, as the person who has given the budget, know what has happened. And their facilitation, community facilitation, in Kandolo, it's a horror story of Taiwan consent. The manner in which they handled that project. We said, at the very end, we said to ICT, you can't behave to the family and tell them how their crawl should be like. I mean, a crawl in Guadalajara is not like a crawl in Berlin. A crawl in Berlin is not like a crawl in Pinhas. Yeah. There are different styles of doing this. There are different ways of doing Ubusan. They can go and take an control on how Ubusan should look like. And this is what they did. And go and look at the results. And I've finished with my own eyes. You can go as a department to look at them. We, as a province, we talk to them, we advise them to really spend time trying to, because we didn't have a friend in that, it's a national project, so we don't have a date as a province. So I think it's important for you to work with them, because the project at the end of the day is your project. And you wouldn't like people to sit through fighting in that area. That's the last thing that a leadership project wants, to have people killing each other because of a project that's being executed in their community. So I'm really keen for this unit to ensure that everything will be finished. Another members, are there any additions or comments? Any additions?
You raise an important question in China. I don't know in the committee who raised the issue of Japan. When the country ended in February, end of March,
to blame the cheap infrastructure. We cannot continue with the project or start and doing the race. It's actually to continue to do the race, but you can't stop start and wait range. In the Western Cape, the rain is starting now in April. Until whenever. So your closest to Western Cape. See, there's everything you have to do in April until July. The process is going to turn up very difficult. In the inland, the rain starts in August, September. Now, your open period to construct is from March. Starting January, all I care for the ensuing year, because you will have funds to pay. So if you have planned your things properly, I guess you build in your own house. I mean, the period we have, and I'm not trying to speak to myself as partners, because partners say, I can't just spend money, I only get the money in first trade in April. If you start your project for 2015, 2016, the best time is starting March, in late. Because April you'll have money, when you get your claims, you are able to pay them from your, from what I call, by August, when it starts to rain, you are 8% working, because it's also the third month in December. January, some places are raining, February, you actually are almost done with your project. So if your plans for 2015 have not started, this year, next year, you'll be in this situation. It's a simple matter. Operational management, that's what it's called. So if you don't do the right time, it can't happen. Then you're going to say, yeah, it rains. It was going to rain. It will rain for the coming, for as long as you are alive, it will rain during that period. But there are times when there is no rain. That's the time to build. So thank you. I think that we have raised that issue because it's only planning, 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 and planning for the ensuing year. Otherwise, if you don't do that, it's going to be the same thing.
Thank you. Otherwise, another thing. And I think my last words be on your recommendations, so just concretize your first recommendations and tell us what exactly, if you are saying that you are going to please us, what does that mean to be specific? So that when you make it easy for us to measure, you know, the work that you do, what's your infrastructure plan, what's the budget and all that stuff, so that we can be able to, and what are you going to do within a specified time, so that we are able to monitor and flash the red light to say, in this area, you are not doing well. What's the problem? How can you be assisted? Because this is not a basic content. It's about the people that you are serving. It's not about us. It's not about you. It's about the people that you are serving. So I think that is very important. But we should have that always at the base of our minds. But we want this service to be delivered. And when we ask questions, we are not asking questions because we want to study or want to, you know, to do anything, but we just want you to realize that, there's something that's not going on right in this area. So let's do something to change things about. It's not about us, it's not about you, it's about the people that you are serving. We are not happy, and in our next meeting, we want to be clearly presentation and give it to us beforehand so that we are able to look at it before we come to the meeting. We are stepping off now from this. I hope employees noted this thing, and they've also noted this thing that they need to do in the administration so that we are clear about what they are supposed to do. Now we are stepping off this presentation. We are going to the White House.
Thank you. acknowledge some failures and functions in the language communication, referring some pages out from the student to ABC chapter 25, where the ABC document has written chapters in the next 25 that we are already. This is a policy question that we outline with no major strike in mind and a policy environment that has already applied in the student. So thank you very much.
So the purpose of any white paper, in especially a white paper on arts culture, is to make a policy pronouncement on arts culture and heritage. So it must be absolutely clear what the intentions are and why this policy direction is being adopted. It must implement the constitutional mandate as the primary element which informs all of the work in the Indian country. It must act as a guide and unifying principle for DfE policies and programs. And very critically, it must ensure the implementation of the NDP, which is NAPO policy and planning. So the White Paper 1996, a very powerful document that essentially ushered in a new democratic reformation in the arts. It was based on a very detailed consultation process led by the Agriculture Task Force with ACCAB, with the aim of effecting fundamental transformation in accordance with democratic values, to give substance to the rights of citizens, access to and participate in and enjoy the arts and its cultural heritage, to facilitate optimum conditions in which these rights could be enjoyed and practiced, and of course, very importantly, to transform the institutional landscape. Since the promulgation, believe it or not, 19 years ago, there have been substantial developments. A new funding regime was initiated, the National Arts Council, the National Film and Media Foundation, the National Heritage Council, the lottery, which while not directly under the purview, was in fact proposed in this particular white paper. New institutions are being created to transform the heritage landscape. We've seen a plethora of new heritage institutions like Robben Island Museum, the Chief Albert Street Museum. Arts curriculum was introduced to schools and formal vocational and training regime was established, just to mention a few of the elements of that policy agenda which really changed the arts quite substantially. However, the White Paper 1996 is no longer a true reflection of the long-range objectives of the National Development Plan, hence the need for the report. Obviously, some of the elements remain profoundly relevant still, but there's a critical need to pull a new policy environment together, recognizing the changes that have been made and ensuring proper alignment. In 2015, then Minister of Arts and Culture, Sukumo Shikira, initiated a project of review, which was aimed at identifying factors which impact negatively on sector performance and making recommendations as to how these factors could be addressed. A draft white paper was released in June 2013 for public comment, which really noted the overlaps and duplications across the proliferation of institutions and agencies, the need to focus interventions on the economy in line with broader government initiatives, and the need for improved alignment with objectives such as nation building, social cohesion, and the national development. This revised white paper proposed a wide range of policy, legislative, and programmatic interventions in this regard, to focus primarily on the creative industries. Some of the key proposals in that document were standardized terminology and definitions, transforming the institutional landscape to ensure equitable delivery, clarifying the roles and mandates of the DAC agencies and the stakeholders, creating intergovernmental and sectoral mechanisms for integrated and collaborative implementation, recognizing and supporting the role of arts and culture and heritage in nation building and social cohesion, and of course that it was for a shift in the economy, increasing sustainable resource vision and result-oriented programs, building professional and technical human resource capacity, supporting the delivery of relevant curriculum at all levels and expanding study options at tertiary level, and transforming the demographic ownership and management profile of the sector. So those very powerful proposals notwithstanding, there have been a number of weaknesses identified in the revised white paper. One of the most difficult and critical are the consultation process that document went through, and a failure to deliver a more broad transformative vision for the sector, a vision that really pulled the sector together towards a shared goal and shared idea of what the future should be. A narrow focus on job creation instead of a broader focus on sustainable livelihoods,
a lack of clarity on the role of policy instruments in the process of sustainable economic activities in the context of jobless growth and economic decline. So it seems that it wasn't necessarily vested in the context of a Melbourne South Africa. A lack of clarity on the relationship between value creation, value capture, and value circulation. Failure to identify instruments for market creation. A lack of coherent proposal for instruments that can create an enabling environment for artists. And a lack of institutional clarity on the alignment of creation policy and program intervention and the goal of social cohesion. So in this context, we've initiated a further review, which aims to produce a cohesive document that harmonizes with the nuances and complexities of transformation in the past cultural heritage, and which fully engages with the NDP goals of fostering constitutional values, equal opportunities, inclusion and integration, and creating and implementing social compact. And of course, creating a framework for the implementation of outcome routines that promotes constitutional values, uses national gains, builds non-racialism, promotes British and culture, transforms the utilization of marginalized languages, uses international events to promote the country, develops social, a social contact for more democratic, equal, and prosperous society. So the focal point of the review, and therefore then, to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of current institutions and structures of the Commission in meeting program outputs and outcomes. To examine policy shortcomings that have resulted from the implementation of programs by assessing the impact of DAC interventions on program outcomes. To assess stakeholder perceptions based on underlying comprehension of program activity against current policy. To assess the alignment of policy provisions, institutions and structures with the goal of social cohesion and nation building. So it's a fairly narrow review. The critical output here will be an interim report documenting the lessons learned, highlighting the weaknesses, challenges and cultural growth practices, and then using that as a base document to essentially develop a revised white paper. So a new document that takes the learnings from the audit process, but also brings the inputs from the new process to create a revised white paper. The first phase was initiated in October, which is a preliminary review of the 1996 white paper and the existing draft, and of course, very importantly, stakeholder consultations which are planned for the next couple of weeks. The 18th of March in Johannesburg at the Market Theatre, the 26th of March, which is in Cape Town, at a venue still to be confirmed, the 31st of March in Port Elizabeth, at a venue to be confirmed, and the 2nd of April in Durban at the Playhouse Company. This particular phase will result in the interim review report, which will in fact be the basis of the revised white paper. Phase 2 will in fact be the drafting of the documents between April and May, and Phase 3 will start the process of a submission to Cabinet of the draft policy documents going toward the Cabinet Trustee Systems across all the different clusters to prepare documents for approval by Cabinet and Green Paper and submission to Parliament for further consultation in that process. So that chairperson is essentially a very high level summary of the lecture and the presentation on the white paper. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, an opportunity to ask questions or make comments. Mine is on the issue, you raised the issue of the first one not being, not having enough consultants. And I want to ask, with your program now, as you see it here, are you comfortable with the consultation that you also have in both areas? That I think we have enough consultation on the, I think as the referral committee would like to hear. And I think the issue of cancer, because I wanted to have the issue of my friend to admit as well. Are there any other questions about the members?
Can you go back on the slide of the stakeholder? Yeah, the consultation is very good. This is really becoming a pandemic. So this means that it's key is included now. In everything that you are doing, whether you are doing all those things that you are teaching, so this is the case, housing and death and the security there. What about other provinces? Yes. What about other provinces? Are they not? You know what I'm asking? I understand you and Greg and Isaac. You understand that you're talking about this. Because everything
you are doing is kind of an demand for this.
I'm not happy about that.
You cannot say, this is not representative of what the country is. We have other policies, other five policies. Irrespective of whether they are, I don't know, some of them for what they are going, but they also need an opportunity to have an understanding of what they do. That's the only question that I really wanted to raise, because he and who are younger in Nisa, so I'm thinking that they are going now. Now, what if I tell them this? So no one can come up like that, let us see us. Then they will be never now. I would really want to see my colleagues say, this portfolio organization is representative of almost all the provinces. You also want to see your Mpumalanga, my province is the same, by the way. You want to see your Mpumalanga, you want to see the Limpopo, you want to see Northwest, for example, another program that is there, okay? So, what about the other? That's my concern, for example. If you really have to, but you have a little bit of a question, you have to answer that question, so that our province can be recognized and know that. In South Africa, there are 9 provinces, and consultation should be done in all of those provinces. It should not be done only in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban. We have our focus there. There are a lot of venues in places where you can have it. We've got stadiums, beautiful ones, where we can even have a lot of people that we can have in Johannesburg. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Provinces, Chairperson, the Equis Project is a very good director of the
I don't think so.
But again, it goes back to the department. So they're not singing out other departments, other provinces. What about the people in Nipoti? Right in rural, are you saying that maybe those ones can't stand right, or maybe they are not more visible in terms of Northern Cape than others? You know, all departments, including the state board, are actually good for that when they do even show or they go to all the departments. And when you write your report, you will be saying out of 9 provinces, the attendance was weak, maybe in Gauteng, but it was well attended in the district. People of Gauteng, they are not that much in culture in the things of a department of art and culture. If you call the choir of music, they will go. But if you take this down to Mpumalanga, the world is because people want to present. So check all those things. Majesty, how we can check how many people are going there, they go to stage. So check all those things. Don't fight us too much in Gauteng, whether the information can travel people to get there. So, do your homework well. Whoever can do this thing, you can tell the location on the video and the consultation process. This is the consultation process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Member. Are there other comments or questions? Mr. Mashanga?
But the, you know, in a few years ago, Mr. President Cecil Thabo Mbeki and the speaker on the legislature were taken to court for lack of appropriate consultation. And the Constitutional Court gave a judgment. It had to do with the 12th or 13th Amendment of the Constitution to the process. So, how the Constitutional Court expressed itself on that matter is very important. So, in the manner in which we go about doing competition, it cannot be as business as usual. We really must listen to these institutions, because if anyone in the other areas would say, but if you never reach anything called, consultation is adequate, but an attempt to interface with people is crucial. It's good that Johannesburg is considered, because unfortunately all the artists now have been mobilized from all other provinces to go and converge in Gauteng. But you remember, even last week we had SAMRO, which is not a government entity, but we felt that, you know, in order for them to say they are doing their job adequately, they must try and ensure access. And I think that's the, not because they come from those provinces, I don't think it is just the right thing to do for us as a country. But the reason why I have problems, Nami, like the rest of my colleagues in those presentations, the good thing is I'm not going to talk to my colleagues. Northwest. You know, Northwest has been one of the very strong forces in terms of mobilizing the youth to participate in culture. And it has become a culture in Northwest, which unfortunately the current government has abandoned. It happened during the Northwest time, and I think it was the Irish legacy. Most of your participants, either in media, in radio, in TV, the people that we're talking about here, they were created by Mabatu, Mabane. Yes, I'm sure I don't need to say Mabatu, because Mabatu broadcasting station, whatever it was, the Mabana, that are written everywhere, have created those people. He has given us all them of participating in the national BBC, CNN, some of those apps, I mean, your presenters there, are coming from Twitter's land. Now, the current, there's an infrastructure, there's a culture, and we're failing to enhance that culture. The Premier of Northwest, when he presented his budget last week, he went to town about what they wanted to do. He even wanted to take back that is now in the private hands, tied back into the state, and unleash the potential of the people. And therefore, we, as the provincial, I mean, the national department, must have the heartbeat of, for me, living out Northwest, we are doing a serious disservice. That's all I wanted to say. So the rest, if you don't know, I'm just speaking to that one man. But yeah, that's all I want to say. But yeah, let's try and improve.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Do you want to say something? Perhaps just to acknowledge the collaborative input from the committee to say that we need to relook, and we will, at the concentration. I would like to thank the Honourable Member for pointing out that consultation is never enough. But we're trying to balance the urgency of getting a policy agenda in place, which is already long delayed, and of course the need to have a genuine engagement with our sector about what they would like the future to be. So that balance is quite hard to strike at the moment, but I will certainly take back to the Acting DG the sense that the Portfolio Committee is clear that we must have a wider range of consultations to have a robust and credible consultation process.
Because the data is actually come up with input from different provinces, and people from other provinces who come up and say, we are not part of that. We don't identify, we say, we are not part of that. And what do you do? So that will go back and start up. So I think it's important to consult in that. The findings of the previous portfolio committee was that it's like you got into an apartheid bus and drove, you know, as the department. You just took the driving seat and drove with the institution where they exactly are. If you look at the funding of the institution in this province, these provinces, and ignoring those provinces that were ignored by the apartheid system. So I think as the department, you need to be sensitive to that. And when you're making decisions, you must always have this at the back of your mind, that this is how we are perceived, right? Because that is got into the upper district and going off. Instead of looking at, you know, how you could turn around the situation. Those that were ignored, not saying that we are going to do away with those that energy can, but to try to bring those that we do not. So we would like to encourage that as a society. In whatever you do, always at the center of the mind, help the success. Those that are disadvantaged. So don't ignore them. Just like the other person did. But try to, even if there is no theater in the form, how can we ensure that we have it? Even if it's not today, but have a plan in place to ensure that we have one, because there is not. But we'd like to thank you very much for the work that you are doing, and you know there's a room for improvement, and we are aware that there are challenges. Who said that there would be any challenges? Nobody commented that there would be challenges, but what we need to do is to ensure that we face the challenges, we, you know, we go forward, however difficult it might be, because I know that sometimes it's not easy. But who said it's going to be easy? Nobody promised us that it's going to be easy. That we are here to deliver a mandate, and we have to give it to the best of all our needs. I thank you very much, and I encourage you.